William Cohen is back on the show this afternoon. He is the former senator from Maine and former Secretary of Defense, who last appeared on this show back in February when he and his wife Janet Langhart Cohen had a best-selling book called Love in Black and White. Well, now he's got his novel, Dragonfire, that's out as a mass-market paperback. And because there's so much going on that we can talk to him about, I'm happy to welcome him back to the show this afternoon. Mr. Secretary, how are you today?
I am well, and it's great to be back with you.
Nice to have you back on the show. Before we talk about the book, can we talk about some war-related stuff?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It talks about war-related stuff, but this is more current.
Yeah. I want to play for you a piece of audio from just a couple of hours ago from the current Secretary of Defense, the man who has the job you once had, Bob Gates, on Congress not being able to come to agreement on the war funding bill. Here's what the Secretary of Defense said today.
The military would cease operations at all Army bases by mid-February next year. This would result in the furloughing of about 100,000 government employees. These layoffs would have a cascading effect on depots and procurement. Similar actions would follow for the Marine Corps about a month later.
Now
we can only move a total of $3.7 billion under general transfer authority, which amounts to a little over 1 week's worth of war expenses. There is a misperception that this department can continue funding our troops in the field for an indefinite period of time through accounting maneuvers, that we can shuffle money around the department.
Now, the Democrats, who voted for this overwhelmingly in the House but did not have enough votes in the Senate, say, look, you know, we're talking about a $471 billion annual budget, and if we're going to fund this war any further, we're going to have some restrictions put on what the president can do, and certainly we want to have troop withdrawal as part of one of the things that we're going to demand in exchange for that money. What's your take on all of this?
Well, having been there, I understand exactly what Secretary Gates is saying, is that you have very limited authority to move money around. The money is both authorized and then appropriated for specific purposes, and the Secretary of Defense doesn't have the power to say, well, I'm going to take it out of this account and put it over into Afghanistan or Iraq. He doesn't have that authority. So a loss of flexibility, it certainly is going to present a real challenge to the Defense Department. The difficulty is that even though the budget is roughly, let's say it's roughly $450 or $60 billion, if you look at that spending, it's well below what the average has been when we have, ever since World War II, we've been coming down dramatically. It's about 4% of the GDP. That is historically, that's not excessive. But the supplemental budget is what I believe Secretary Gates is also talking about. There's a supplemental request for up to $192 billion to continue operations in Afghanistan and Iraq. So the issue becomes whether or not Congress can or will put restrictions on the spending, saying they're going to tie troop withdrawal to that spending. And what I think that the danger here is, just as things seem to be getting somewhat better, and no one wants to engage in any act of irrational exuberance, but just as they seem to be getting better in terms of the level of violence coming down in places like Anbar province, and it seems that the former Sunni insurgents who were fighting against us are now fighting against al-Qaeda. That's all very positive news. Now, whether that can be sustained remains to be seen, but we're going to see a reduction in the troop level in any event come March, because you've got people who have been deployed for 15 months and they're not going to be extended. So the numbers are going to be coming down somewhat. Then the question will become, are things settling down and more ability to transfer that responsibility over to the Iraqi military taking place, so that systematically, starting hopefully in June, if not sooner, you can start to see decrements or the reductions in the numbers of troops over there. I think that that's the prudent way to move. Congress may decide that it wants to move much faster, then that runs the risk of whether or not the progress being made gets undone. And I don't think that's in anyone's interest, Democratic or Republican.
Yeah, it seems to me like the requirement that we bring the troops home being tied to the war funding settles more into the side of politics rather than the side of practicality. Am I wrong?
Well, I think it falls in at that level. Of course, the majority of the American people have turned against the war in Iraq because we've spent so much blood, so much treasure, and they haven't seen much in the way of progress.
Yep.
And quite to the contrary. So the mood has shifted dramatically. But now the question, for me, it has always been an issue, not when we leave, but how we leave. How do we leave Iraq? What state of affairs is it going to be in? How are we seen in terms of all of the other countries in the region, in terms of being a credible force, not to mention elsewhere throughout the world. So how we leave becomes very important, and I think the plan as it is now, whether one agrees with the involvement in Iraq in the first place, now the question is how do we systematically manage an exit strategy so that the country remains relatively stable and that we have credibility in terms of the other allies in the region who are depending upon us, or will they turn to the Russians or the Chinese or others in order to have their security? So we've got big interests involved, and notwithstanding, I think it's pretty clear from General Petraeus's testimony, notwithstanding whoever gets elected next November and takes office in January of 2009, that person, Democrat or Republican, is going to be faced with roughly 100,000 troops in that region. And so this has got to be done in a prudent way, and I'm hopeful that we can see progress being made, that we can see a reduction in those troops.
And the next president certainly is also going to have to deal with the questions about Iran. There was some good news from Iraq on that front, that Iran supposedly is cut down on the number of weapons that they are providing to insurgents. But the IAEA yesterday came out with a report on Iran and its nuclear activities, saying that they are up to 3,000 centrifuges now. And Iran, of course, continues to say that they only want to make electricity. They don't want to make bombs. Where do you think we stand with Iran these days?
You know, we have very little, very few options available in dealing with Iran. But the one option that should be available is one that everyone has an interest in, and that is the UN Security Council, the major powers who are there. The Russians have talked publicly, the Chinese have supported it publicly, of saying that it will be very bad news for world security if Iran goes forward with the production of nuclear weapons. That means if they are allowed to do so, that you're going to see Egypt follow suit, the Saudis follow suit, United Arab Emirates follow suit. You're going to see a proliferation of nuclear weapons in that region and beyond. That's not in the interest of anyone who wants to see global stability. So there's an opportunity here for the Russians to send the signal to the Iranians along with the Chinese. We've already heard from President Sarkozy from France taking a tough position, Gordon Brown from Great Britain, I think Angela Merkel from Germany. All of these countries are united in the position that they should not go forward with nuclear weapons. The Russians have offered the Iranians a proposal which we have supported, namely that the enrichment for nuclear energy purposes can be done in Russia, but not for purposes of nuclear weapons in Iran. And so there is an opportunity for Iran to achieve nuclear power but not develop nuclear weapons if they really are interested in that. But that's going to take leverage coming not only from the United States and our European friends, but from the Russians and the Chinese as well.
Talking with William Cohen, former Secretary of Defense here on KMOX, when you talk of nuclear, we're having a little trouble with another nuclear power these days. Are we seeing the last days of Pervez Musharraf as the head of Pakistan?
We don't know. I think at this point, much remains to be determined. The only conclusion one can come to at this point is that whoever becomes the leader of that country, the army and the military, is still going to be the major force for maintaining order. And I don't see that changing in the near future. So even if President Musharraf is not in office, I think you'll see a military figure who will assume a good deal of power. What one hopes is that we can persuade President Musharraf, who has been helpful, by the way, in waging this campaign against al-Qaeda, who has done some really pretty significant things economically for Pakistan. When he took over in that coup, the economy was really stagnating, and since that time it's grown at a rate of about 7% a year for the last 4 years. So he's done some positive things. What he hasn't done is kept his word about and pledge to move toward the restoration of civilian rule. And that's why we're seeing what we're seeing today in terms of not al-Qaeda in the streets or the Taliban in the streets or the extremists, but rather judges and lawyers. And that's not something that I think is going to be easily understood by many people in the world. So hopefully there can be some kind of an agreement struck. He will keep his word about having parliamentary elections in, I think it's on January 9th of next year. And that's only a month or so away. So there's an opportunity for him to keep a pledge on that account, and maybe that will help stabilize things.
What about Benazir Bhutto? Is she going to be able to have a role in Pakistan? Did you know her, by the way?
I don't know her. I think I met her on one occasion only, but I don't have any relationship with her. Well, her own career has not been exactly outstanding in terms of the allegations that have been pending against her for some time, namely the level of corruption that was evident during her reign.
Yeah.
That was part of the deal that was supposed to be brokered, that they would negate all of those allegations and she would be free to come back and try and run for office. And there was hope that they could have some sort of a bargain struck between the two of them. That may still be possible, but the longer this goes on or the longer she's in house arrest, under house arrest, then that becomes more difficult to see take place.
Talking with William Cohen, the former Secretary of Defense, here on News Talk 1120 KMOX. His novel is called Dragonfire. I believe if you're a former Secretary of Defense, you may be among the few people who could write a book about a Secretary of Defense being assassinated. Without getting a knock on the door from somebody at the Secret Service or somewhere. But that's central to the plot of your book, isn't it?
Well, I'll tell you that anyone who occupies that position and living in the world in which we do, you can anticipate that there are people out there who mean you harm. And that's the reason why Secretary Gates, Secretary Rumsfeld, myself, and all others have that kind of level of protection when both here at home, but also certainly abroad. And I still receive protection from other countries when I travel abroad because of concern for that. So the threat against one's life remains real for those who have visible and fairly powerful positions, and just something you have to deal with. Now, the idea of the novel came about, or at least that beginning of the novel, was the threat of anthrax poisoning. I became concerned that there's so much anthrax in the world, so much of it available and could be available to those who want to spread it to kill a lot of people, that I mandated the vaccination of all of our men and women in uniform. The difficulty was we didn't have enough supply, that we only had one facility producing it. It didn't have enough on hand, had to build a new facility to get FDA approval. That was not forthcoming, and so we had to cut down the number of people who could be vaccinated. Now, I was one of those first in line, along with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, because we wanted to send a signal to our people, our folks in the military, that whatever risks might be involved with an old vaccine, actually, that we were willing to bear that risk as well. So we lined up first and had our series of six shots. But then the idea occurred to me, what happens if you had a Secretary of Defense who didn't have that inoculation and an adversary knew that he or even she would be vulnerable? So that's the genesis of the idea of the threat of biological weapons being used against the United States. And you may recall that shortly after 9/11, we saw anthrax spores being sent through the mails into NBC's offices in New York and also on Capitol Hill with Tom Daschle, who was the majority leader at that time. And it shut down Capitol Hill. They closed off all of the offices on the Hill until such time as they could be satisfied that there were no that there was not spread. And so this is a threat that's still out there, and it was just it was a thought that occurred to me at the time that this is always possible.
You've got a character in here who's a beautiful Israeli agent, Elena. Did you have to vet that character through Janet?
Oh, Janet usually inspires. She is an assassin. She is a killer. And I'm talking emotionally and spiritually. She strikes right at the heart. It's been my love for so many years. But she has some of those characteristics of the magnetism that this character in the novel has, to be sure. So a killer of a different sort.
But did you have to go to her and say, okay, read what I wrote here and tell me if it's okay for me to put this on paper?
Well, she knows that she has been the inspiration for several of my novels, and so I think she's become acclimated to it, and she actually finds it amusing that I put her in that category of being so magnetic a personality that men are simply intoxicated with her spirit and beauty, and she is takes advantage of it. But in this particular case, the Mossad agent is a professional assassin and one who can take out men up close and real personal.
Before I let you go, Mrs. Secretary, I'd like your reaction to one other thing, if we can get away from the novel and get back to the real world for just a second. This is another piece of audio from today. This is General George Casey, the U.S. Army Chief of Staff, talking about what the war is doing to the numbers of men and women we have in uniform in our military right now.
Today's Army is out of balance. The current demand for our forces exceeds the sustainable supply. We're consumed with meeting the demands of the current fight and are unable to provide ready forces as rapidly as necessary for other contingencies.
He says we're stretched too thin, we're dropping recruitment standards, we're extending deployments, we are something like 3,000 captains short. We're allowing more people with criminal records into the military just to fill up some of those slots. What's going on here?
All of the above is true. It's a tragic situation we have. But when I was in office, you may recall that George Bush made the statement that our military was hollow and that we had two divisions that were unable to report for duty. That was not accurate or true. And I and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, who had been reluctant to get involved in any kind of political statements, felt compelled to speak out that, yes, the military at that time was stretched thin, but we were not hollow. The difficulty is that we have the same size force, essentially, today. And not only are we in Kosovo and Bosnia, but now we're in a major way in Afghanistan and especially in Iraq. So what was then a force that was stretched thin has really been stretched almost to the breaking point. So what General Casey is saying is true. And the other fact that we have to point out is we're really a nation that's not at war. There are only a small segment of our population that is committed to this campaign, be it in Afghanistan or Iraq and worldwide. And what we need to do is, if we're going to be in a war or a long-term struggle against terrorism, we better put the nation on a higher level of footing for that. And that means more volunteers. I think it means a campaign of national service that we need to encourage our young people to contribute at least 2 years to something beyond their own pursuits. And I hope to be even more vocal than I've been in the past about the need to have a program of national service, that we have to put this country on a mental footing, to saying this is dangerous out there. There are forces at work that mean us harm. We've got to do more and better, and we've got to restore this country to its greatness. And I think it's possible. I think we need to do it. We need to listen. We need to learn, and we've got to start leading again. And that's something that I and former Senator Nunn, and I have talked about a great deal. We're going to be doing something in the near future to try and stir a debate on issues which have been not largely ignored, but not dealt with in a substantive way. And he and I hope to have a series of meetings that we will engage experts in the field to start talking about issues on foreign policy, defense policy, domestic policy as well. But we've got to get the country focused. There are some people, a very limited amount of people, who are fighting this war. The rest of us are going to the malls.
Well, you're always welcome on this show to discuss issues like that, and I appreciate your time today very much.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for, on behalf of Janet as well, when you gave us a lot of opportunity with the other book.
You're very welcome.
Black and White.
Yeah, please say hi to her from me. And by the way, if you are interested in getting William Cohen's new book, his novel, Dragonfire, we've got a link to it on KMOX.com, and if you buy it through that link, a portion of the proceeds will go to St. Louis Children's Hospital. Former Secretary of Defense William S. Cohen here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.